I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but it's something like we're now eating 100 pounds of sugar per year per person. And previously it was, I think, on the order of 1 to 3 pounds. And I will have to check my sources on that. But it's essentially two orders of magnitude higher now than it was 150 years ago.
Welcome to this classic episode of Spartan Up, where we pull together highlights from past episodes to help answer a question. Today, we're talking about sugar. What does it do to your body, and how can you reduce your dependency on it? Today, we'll hear from Sarah Wilson. She's the author of I Quit Sugar and the book This One Wild and Precious Life. She talks about the impact sugar had on her, how she overcame it, and she shares her tips so you can do the same. Next, Josh Clemente. Josh is the founder of Levels. Levels uses continuous glucose monitoring to help you understand the impact sugar has on your own body, and he shares some of the patterns that they found in the data. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Superbeats Heart Chews. Right now, you can get a free 30-day supply with your first purchase at superbeats.com/Spartan. Sarah Wilson changed her life and then created a career helping others to change theirs with her successful book, I Quit Sugar.
You quit sugar?
Yeah, I quit sugar exactly 10 years ago, actually. So it was 10 years ago, and it was an experiment that I started. It worked, so I just kept going and going and going.
How hard was it to quit sugar? I mean, I'm trying to get my kids off sugar. I try to tell everybody I know sugar is no good. I fight with myself over, you know, when you're hungry and there's nothing around, you're in the airport, and I go grab a Cliff Bar or something. I'm mad at myself. Like, how'd you do it?
It was hard. And I've got an autoimmune disease. And I reckon there'd be a fair few of your listeners who have got an autoimmune disease because they're rampant at the moment. I have Hashimoto's, which is a thyroid disease. So I got really sick in my mid-30s and I couldn't find anything that could work to get myself back on track. So I did this experiment. And I'd read a lot of science on it and I just thought I'd give it a go. Now, the human mind is such that we do not do stuff if we're told to do it, like do not touch wet paint. All we want to do is touch it, right? So my approach has always been to work with abundance. So instead of just quitting sugar, I instead switched the mindset to what you could eat. And so it's almost like I crowded out the bad stuff with so much good stuff. And I think it probably fits in with your philosophy, Joe. Like, I ate good quality protein, good quality fats, and I focused on that. And then that did make it easy. The other thing that I did was I treated it as an experiment. So I sort of say to people, try it for 2 weeks. The program is actually 8 weeks, and it takes 8 weeks or 60 days to reverse both the mental habit or mental addiction, but also the physical addiction, so the hormonal dysregulation. So I say try it for 2 weeks. Now, the best thing that happens at the 2-week mark, and I reckon we can do most things for 2 weeks. After that, it gets too exhausting. Like, any diet fails after a couple of weeks. But what happens when you quit sugar? First of all, you start to have a lot more energy, and so it becomes addictive, right? The second thing is your skin clears up and our vanity takes over. So wrinkles and pimples just back away, and it's really noticeable. So that's one of the first things that changes is the skin, the collagen and the elastin in the skin. The other thing that really shifts is our sense of taste, and that takes about 2 weeks as well. So after 2 weeks, when you go and eat a chocolate bar that you used to eat every day beforehand, it'll be too sweet for you. So you've already dialed down your sweet sort of addiction. It also helps, Joe, to really know what sugars are the ones that are going to make a big impact. So one of the things I say is if you're starting out for the first time with all of this, just quit all liquid sugars. So juice. And juice is regarded as a liquid sugar, just like, you know, fizzy drink or you call it soda. It's regarded as a added sugar now by the WHO. And I've been saying that for 10 years. And, of course, people thought I was mad 10 years ago. But it's essentially just the sugar from the fruit and not much else. Sure, it's got some vitamins and so on. But I'd say drink water, take a vitamin tablet or eat some vegetables, you know. So if you cut out that kind of sugar, then you're cutting out a huge chunk. So let's say a glass of apple juice or a glass of Coca-Cola, this big, contains around about 7 teaspoons of added sugar. Now, the WHO now says that we can handle 6 to 9 teaspoons of added sugar in an entire day. For children, it's about 3. So when you drink a glass of apple juice or a glass of Coke, you know, like a standard Coke can, you've gone over. You've gone over your entire daily limit. So cut out liquid sugar. And there's a couple other things you can do as well. And then it means that if you do sort of eat an occasional treat and so on, it's not going to be a huge problem. But the 8-week program is definitely about doing abstinence for 8 weeks, recalibrating your appetite system, your leptin and your ghrelin, so that you're eating as your body is meant to eat. You eat like a kid again, where you get hungry and you get full. Because we've lost that mechanism, and it's because of sugar. So fructose, there's nothing really inherently wrong with fructose, but the thing is, it's a molecule that, as you say, 100 years ago, 100 plus years ago, didn't really exist in nature all that much. So when we were cavemen, we wandered around and there was a bit of honey and maybe some berries. And we were programmed to be obsessed by anything with fructose in it because it was quite rare. Now, what the reason for that is that fructose is actually the fastest, most effective source of fat on the planet. So if we want to get body fat really quickly, we eat sugar. Now, of course, nobody tells us that these days, but our bodies knew that back in the caveman days. So back then, to come across a berry bush or a beehive, we were programmed to be obsessed by it. So because it was such a good source of fat and we needed it back then. We were also programmed to have no off switch for it, right? So the fructose molecule actually shuts down the ghrelin and leptin mechanism, which is the hormones that regulate your appetite and tell you when you're full. We don't have an off switch or a full switch for fructose. And anyone who's kind of had one scoop of ice cream and had to go back for more and can actually find themselves eating that much, or anyone who's eaten a Coke, a mega size Coke this big, can you imagine drinking that much yogurt with, you know, good quality fats and everything in it? No, like it's impossible because we have an off switch for fat. We don't have it for fructose. Now, they've also shown that when we eat fructose, it actually programs us to eat more of everything. So I think what you're saying is absolutely correct. When we eat a bit of sugar, it actually programs to go and hunt out more. Wow, there's some sugar here. We need to binge on this because we don't know when we're going to get the next fix. We have not evolved that much from 10,000 years ago, you know? Like, we just haven't. We've still got the same metabolic mechanisms. So we still behave like the cavemen, women, except we've got sugar just drowning us, right? We don't even have to go and put some physical effort into getting it, you know? Like our forebears used to have to go and hunt for it and climb over mountains to get to a beehive, you know? These days it's just there and it's ready, and, of course, we metabolize it in the same way. So you're absolutely right. It does trigger this desire to go and out and get more of it because we think, oh, my God, it's here somewhere. We're going to have to gorge. When we eat sugar and really low quality carbs like your pizzas and, you know, so on, what we're doing is we're throwing kerosene or like paper onto our metabolic fire. So it means that we're constantly going like this, and you've got to constantly stoke the fire. You've got to throw on more paper or more twigs. And that's why, you know, that whole snacking culture that started in the early 90s, it's terrible because it facilitates that sort of stoking of the fire with these cheap fuels. When you eat a proper meal like your eggs and salad with proper protein, good quality fat, etc., it's like putting a log on your fire, a nice big sturdy dense log, and you put it on first thing in the morning and it burns for 4 or 5 hours. You get to lunch and then your natural appetite mechanisms kick in, your ghrelin makes you hungry, and then you go, oh, another log on the fire. So you're attending to it 3 times and with really good quality dense fuel. And I find that that actually gets people thinking about it quite differently. And that's why, for instance, when you eat your salad and your eggs, you're satiated. And people go, oh, it's boring. But you know what it's doing? It's just like this other kind of mindset kicks in, because people go, oh, I won't be happy with that. I want my granola. I want my comfort food. You know, that makes me feel good. When you start eating like that, you actually realize the hormones take care of themselves. and they make you feel good. You're not even thinking about granola or chocolate or muffins, you know. You are getting on with the rest of your life. Instead of just eating whole food and cooking, we buy packaged foods, and we think that Nestle is going to have the answer to us. And so all these brands now, of course, are pretending to go sugar-free. They're just finding a cheaper way to feed us crap. The solution is simply to cook, eat real food, cook, you know, and don't waste any of it. You simplify your life and you create some beautiful, elegant flow, and then you get to truly live. That's my philosophy. I don't want to tell people something to do that's like painful, annoying, they're not going to enjoy it. You know, change comes about when we can show that the new way is more charming and fun than the old way.
A quick word from today's sponsor, Superbeats Heart Chews. As we age, fatigue and lack of endurance, it's not something we can fix with more and more caffeine. Here's a new way to start your day. Superbeats Heart Chews. They're a tasty treat. They give you the energy you need, and they're good for you. No more afternoon coffee or energy drinks. And don't fall for the idea that candy would be a quick pick-me-up. Add two delicious plant-based Superbeats Heart Chews to your morning routine, and you'll be promoting heart-healthy energy for your day. No caffeine crash. Because Superbeats Heart Chews' unique, clinically researched grapeseed extract promotes heart-healthy energy and normal blood pressure as part of a healthy lifestyle. In fact, the grapeseed extract used in Superbeats Heart Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. So do more for your heart and treat yourself with Superbeats Heart Chews. Get free shipping and returns, a 90-day money-back guarantee. And right now, for Spartan Up listeners, you can get a free 30-day supply with your first purchase at superbeats.com/Spartan. That's superbeats.com/Spartan. Joe sat down with Josh Clemente, founder of Levels Continuous Glucose Monitoring, to understand some of the patterns they discovered in the data about how humans process and deal with sugar. And there are some hints that you can use to improve your own body's relationship with sugar.
So 100, well, I mean, I don't know if you know the facts on this, but 100, 150 years ago, how much sugar intake did we have on an annual basis?
I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but it's something like we're now eating 100 pounds of sugar per year per person. And previously it was, I think, on the order of 1 to 3 pounds. And I will have to check my sources on that. But it's essentially two orders of magnitude higher now than it was 150 years ago.
Yeah. And so could we get away with, other than natural sugars, let's say from an apple or a cherry or whatever healthy, non-ultra processed food, What could we get away? What bare minimum, now that you've been monitoring it, and I don't want to get into how you monitor it, but what could we get away with?
Well, that's the interesting thing is because this technology is coming available, we're starting to see that there's a ton of nuance in how an individual responds to specific foods. And so the technology, so the glucose monitoring tech is called continuous glucose monitoring, and it was initially developed to help with the management of diabetes. So when you have diagnosed extreme blood sugar dysregularity, the technology is really useful for people with diabetes to measure, monitor, and respond to their glucose levels. And so using this technology, we've recently seen some new studies which have come out of places like Stanford, predict trials in the UK, and in the Weizmann Institute in Israel, which have shown that two people can eat the same foods and have an equal and opposite blood sugar response to them. And the classic example here, which was in the study, is a banana and a whole wheat cookie. And so these two people both ate these foods. One person had a huge blood sugar spike on the banana and was flat on the cookie, and had a huge blood, and the other person had a huge blood sugar spike on the cookie and was flat on the banana. And so we're starting to realize that there are sensitivities to like fruit versus grain, the content of fiber, the mixed meal that you're consuming, which can affect each person in actually a significant way. And these gigantic, you know, these excursions in glucose are not isolated. Glucose is upstream of a huge cascade of hormones like insulin, cortisol, adrenaline, all of which affect how we feel. And so a glucose excursion doesn't happen by itself. It affects how you experience for the next hours, days, and in some cases, weeks.
Okay, so then there's a whole lot of questions that pop into my head. Are there some basic foods that are just like no-goes, or really just depends on the person?
There are certainly very generalizable lessons learned. So the goal of Levels, what we're doing is we're giving the individual the opportunity to measure and see in situ, so in the moment, in real time, see how they respond to a specific food or activity. But over the course of us, you know, bringing this technology to a larger audience, we now have the largest data set of non-diabetic glucose information. And so we're starting to see that there are some obvious, you know, generalizable lessons learned. I would say one of the most important things is actually the balance of the meal. And so this means having equal or near equal proportions of carbohydrate, fat, and protein is critical to the way that the typical person metabolizes that meal. So an example of this would be just eating a banana on its own versus eating a banana with like some almond butter or something similar. This has shown essentially across the board an improvement in the postprandial, so the post-meal glucose response. There are other levers we can pull on, like walking after a meal. This is something that like sounds very old wives' tale-ish maybe, but like actually has been shown in the objective data to have an amazing amount of control over how your body will respond to the same meal. So for example, if somebody's gonna eat a whole personal pizza and then lay on the couch versus eat that same personal pizza and go for a 15 or 20 minute walk immediately thereafter, you will have, in 9 times out of 10, we've seen this, a completely different response to it.
So there are some always, like you would always recommend exercise after a meal.
Yes, that is a piece of advice that I would give to anyone right now. If you want to make one change to improve your metabolic control, get up and move more, especially right after meals. And that will affect and improve the way that you metabolize those meals. You will help your body to maintain, especially if they're processed, you know, if you're going to eat processed food or high in carbohydrates and you're not entirely sure, maybe sometimes you feel a little sluggish afterwards. That sluggishness is likely caused by a large glucose excursion, which is followed by a large insulin load, which is going to store that sugar as fat. And so you can avoid all of that by getting up and moving around for 15 to 20 minutes.
And so always exercise after a meal, and probably intensity, the old wives' tale, right? Like don't swim after you eat. Like, is it a medium intensity, low intensity?
So low intensity is really powerful. Just a walk, you can literally have a really nice dinner and go for a walk around the block a few times and have a totally different blood sugar response than if you had sat on the couch. And that's the really, I think, important thing here is it's not necessary to go and run hill sprints. You will actually experience, in some cases, the opposite response if you're doing too intense an exercise, where you have a stress response to the amount of effort that you're putting out, and your body releases cortisol and adrenaline, which are, you know, those fight or flight hormones that help you prepare for a battle. And so if you're pushing too hard, your body will actually flood the bloodstream with additional energy in the form of glucose, and that can help you fuel through the workout. And so this is another really fascinating result of all of this data, is that there are different thresholds, different regimes of exercise that we see. And it's really important to tailor our approach to diet and training nutrition around the types of exercise that we're doing. So if you are, again, like I was saying, if you are doing an all-out 100% workout and you're pushing for a PR, your body's going to produce the energy you need for that endeavor, and you might see a very large glucose response. It's not the same, by the way, as eating a donut, right? So a blood sugar response to a meal is an evolutionary adaptation to give you the energy you need to push through, and it's been shown to improve your glucose response for up to like 48 hours afterwards. Now, for a lower intensity exercise where you're primarily, you know, your heart rate's pretty low, you're not stressed out, you're just going for endurance, this is where your body can tap into other fuel sources like fat. And, you know, we have, so a quick anecdote here, the average human has about 2000 calories of sugar stored in their muscles and liver, which is available for energy, but they have about 80,000 calories of fat stored on their bodies. And this is the average body type. And so tapping into that fat would be the goal for this like longer duration, more endurance oriented exercise. And so having the data on how you respond, whether you're like pushing yourself into a sugar burning mode or not, is really important for people depending on how they're training as well. There's this amazing concept of metabolic flexibility, which is the way that your body can switch between fuel substrates. So whether you can switch between sugar and fat quickly, effectively, and with minimal sort of downtime, you know, someone who's metabolically flexible will be able to do that in the middle of an exercise without even noticing it. Whereas other people who are not metabolically flexible, you put them on a ketogenic diet, and that transition from burning sugar to burning fat is like they get this keto flu. They feel like they're dying. It's like a true inflammatory, painful response for them. So the process of getting to metabolic flexibility is something we should all strive for so that we can tap into that 8 days of available energy in the moment. What's actually happening potentially is you're kicking the system over and over again with this sugar wave when you're actually trying to metabolize fat. That's what you want. That's the larger supply that's available to you. And so you either are going to need to have a constant supply of carbohydrates, you know, bananas and gels, or you train that metabolic flexibility and you teach your body to use what's available. And so I'm a heavy duty proponent of this flexibility concept. And this process of training and developing flexibility is what we call metabolic fitness. So at levels, we've defined metabolic fitness as, a lot of people think that you just put a, you know, glucose monitor on or get your blood tested and you're either healthy or you're not. But the real situation is you just like physical fitness or martial arts or mental fitness, you have to put in focus, effort, and repetition over time to develop metabolic health. It doesn't just happen to you. So we have this concept of metabolic fitness, which is put in the work, look at the data, make better educated decisions daily, and you can improve the way your body responds, both in and out of the performance world. So glucose has 4 calories per gram. So that's basically the energy density of a molecule of sugar versus fat, which has 9 calories per gram. And so if you think about the human body, the human body wants to make sure it has as much energy stored as possible at all times. So what did it choose to do? It chose to store the dense energy molecule, fat, which has more than twice the amount of energy per gram of mass in it, right? So that is the, in my opinion, based on that evolutionary problem solving that was done, fat is the default molecule that our body wants to burn. And I'm not lobbying for everyone to just, you know, drink canola oil or like stick only to fat. It's just that let's make sure that we eat, you know, we have a mixed diet that influences metabolic flexibility, make sure that we have healthy fats available, and then train ourselves to not sort of become reliant on sugar through our diet, but be metabolically flexible, metabolically fit, able to tap into those fat stores when we need them. Because that's what we, you know, historically have had to do. I talked about like exercise postprandially, just being active, using the available energy stores. The worst thing we can do is be sedentary and fueled up all the time. That's how you end up with these metabolic breakdowns, right? So you're completely topped off on energy, but you're not using it. You're sleeping, sitting on the couch, working at a desk job. Make sure you get up and you use your energy. The next thing is really interesting. It would be macronutrient order and balanced meals. So we've seen that not only do you respond better in terms of these glucose excursions, which produce inflammatory results, and you were just talking about, inflammation and oxidative stress or the way that our bodies, you know, sort of the stress we're putting on our systems. Well, when you have these large blood sugar excursions, your body responds as if it's an inflammatory situation. And so it releases these chemicals like these are inflammatory cytokines, you may have heard. So like IL-6, TNF-alpha. And so your body's reacting in an inflammatory way. It's a bad situation when your glucose is high. And so making sure that you eat a balanced meal set, so you have that protein and fat. And if, you know, what's interesting is that fiber also performs this sort of role. So it can help mediate the glucose response to a meal. But we do know that sleep, or the lack thereof, causes acute insulin resistance. A classic example of like a feedback loop that we see and that we have all at one time or another in our lives experienced is consuming alcohol. So you go out for a few drinks in the evening, you drink some alcohol, the alcohol actually has a counterintuitive response. Most people think it's going to cause your blood sugar to skyrocket. In fact, most of the time it will cause your glucose to drop. So your liver seems to prioritize metabolizing the alcohol. And so your glucose will decrease. That decrease in glucose tends to cause these additional hormones, which influence hunger. So you get kind of hungry, right? Now, while you're metabolizing the alcohol, your heart rate goes up, your stress levels go up. You go to sleep, right? You try and just sleep off the hunger. You have terrible sleep all night long because your heart rate's elevated, your body's trying to metabolize off alcohol, your temperature's elevated. You wake up the next morning, you're acutely insulin resistant because you got bad sleep. and you're hungry because your glucose has been low and crashing all through the night from the alcohol. You wake up, you go to brunch, you binge on some extravagant meal. Because you're insulin resistant, your body can't metabolize that sugar effectively. And so you have a larger and worse glucose response to that brunch caused by your decisions 24 hours ago or 18 hours ago in some cases. And this like vicious cycle causes you to be hungry again 4 hours later. And so these are the types of things that like it's clear now with enough data, you can start to see exactly what's happening in real time and start to apply, you know, some degree of control to your decision-making patterns to like, you know, make evidence-based choices rather than emotional choices. What are we trying to optimize for? Some people just really get a huge amount of stress relief from having a glass of wine while they're cooking dinner. And I think the harm is relatively low, and it's actually kind of interesting. There are some of the blue zones in the world where you have a super high concentration of centenarians. They drink a lot of alcohol. They drink, you know, they have a glass of wine daily. But I think what's really interesting is that they typically tend to have it earlier in the day. So, you know, even at lunch, there will be wine served, which we do not have here in the United States. It's like you're drinking after 8 p.m. basically. And earlier in the day allows your body, in my opinion, to metabolize that alcohol out of your system before you go to sleep, such that you can recover and have good restful sleep throughout the night. And you typically will not be, because of your alcohol crash and your glucose levels, binging on food just before you go to sleep, which is what we do here. So, you know, the number of times, you know, I've been a part of a late night, have a couple beers and go get tacos at midnight and go to sleep. It's just like, that is these decisions. They are not without consequence over time. When you're young and fit, it's like, oh, it's no big deal. It's just drinking in some tacos. But over time, as you continue to have these sort of late excursions and you're inducing insulin resistance in your body, and then the next day you're punishing yourself with a follow-up meal that does no good for you, these things compound on each other. And so at the end of the day, what you're getting is you're setting a life trajectory. And that trajectory is it's the culmination of all the choices you're making. And this can sound really scary, except that if you have better information and you know that it's information about yourself, you stop being, it stops feeling like, you know, patronizing advice, or it starts feeling like, okay, this is my body speaking to me and telling me that I'm making poor choices, and it's actually not that hard to make better ones. If you want to have a glass of wine, maybe have it a little earlier in the day and check your heart rate through the night and see if you're recovering well. And that's a way that you can kind of have the best of both worlds type thing.
Thanks for listening to this classic episode of Spartan Up Podcast. We want you to drive yourself to success every day, but we know many of you are taking on new challenges, especially at this time of the year. And without the right mindset, it's easy to let those new challenges, those new promises fall by the wayside. Stick with us. Subscribe to the podcast. Listen to Spartan Up. We're here 3 days a week to motivate you, to inspire you, to bring you new techniques. We are your virtual partner in resilience, here to stand at your side as you take on new challenges. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Superbeats Heart Chews. Right now, you can get a free 30-day supply with your first purchase at superbeats.com/Spartan.